See on the screen this evening, we are leaving Leviticus behind and taking up our first class in the book of Deuteronomy here on May 22nd of 2019. I laughed a moment ago with Ken when I realized that this is my brother's birthday, so I better get on the phone here this evening. It just hit me when I looked at that slide, as a matter of fact. But we are going to now be taking on what is the fifth of the books that are known as the Pentateuch. As you see the Penti in there to begin with for five. The Pentateuch are, of course, these five books that Moses wrote. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy comprise a very large percentage of our entire Bibles. And they give us a broad sweep of human history from the very creation of the universe down, as you know so well, to the end of this book of Deuteronomy, and therefore the end of Moses' life up on a mountain called Nebo, also known as Pisgah. Many, and I guess even most of the mountains that you read about in the Bible will have more than one name based on the peoples that were occupying it at a particular time. So the title slide that you're looking at is probably somewhat incomprehensible here this evening, but it is an unusual map that I just hadn't seen before. It says down here in the lower right hand, lines of unimpeded vision from Mount Nebo. So Mount Nebo is where we're going to start, though not on it. We'll be at the foot of it in the book of Deuteronomy here in a little bit. And then at the end of the book, Moses will be told to climb that mountain to survey the land that he will not be entering. But what they've done here in these black lines is to show that when one is standing in the country of Jordan today, and you're here on Mount Nebo, which is just almost perfectly on an east-west line with the north end of the Dead Sea today, you can see all of Israel that is inside these black lines. Mountains will prohibit your view, there. You can't see past mountains on this side either. But as you look at this, from Mount Nebo, you can look down and see the entirety of the Dead Sea, the furthest reaches of Israel's land, and the dread desert down there, of course, the lowest place on earth. You can easily look across, as Don and I did in 2010, and you can see all the greenery there that is Jericho. It's a matter of just a few miles away, so you have, an overview of Jericho here. This entire line of mountains, this spine of the land of Israel, of course, you see directly across there. You've got the territory of Judah. Here's the Mount of Olives. You can see some of the buildings in Jerusalem itself as well. And then you can look up the entire length of the Jordan River, clear to where it exits the Sea of Galilee, and approximately half of the Sea of Galilee, the western half of the Sea of Galilee, and therefore everything here that is considered Galilee, that's the region of Galilee. And so, while Dan and the furthest reaches of Israel to the north, you would not be able to see from Nebo, you can see the great majority of it. This is a book with all of that in view. This is a very unusual book, I think, in all of our collection of Bible books. And so we're going to have our introductory material on it today, and then we'll be marching our way through just like we did with the book of Leviticus. But I thought we would start just by reading the first six verses before we actually get down into that overview, and introduction. So just come with me to Deuteronomy chapter 1, and here's how the book begins. These are the words which Moses spoke to all Israel across the Jordan, that's the river, in the wilderness, in the Arabah, opposite Suf, between Paran and Topheh, and Laban and Hazeroth and Dizahab. It is 11 days' journey from Horeb, what's the other name for Horeb? Sinai. By the way of Mount Seir, which also is Edom, to Kadesh Barnea. It came about in the 40th year, on the first day of the 11th month, that Moses spoke to the children of Israel according to all that Yahweh had commanded him to give them. After He had defeated Sihon, the king of the Amorites, who lived in Heshbon, and Og, the king of Bashan, who lived in Ashtaroth and Edrei. Crossed the Jordan in the land of Moab, Moses undertook to expound this law, saying, "The Lord our God spoke to us at Horeb, saying, you've stayed long enough at this mountain." Now, if you'll recall, having gone directly from Leviticus now into Deuteronomy, where Leviticus takes place is right there at the immediate location of Mount Sinai. And it takes place in the last couple of months of the first year. And at the end of the book, we've come to the end of the first year. They have the tabernacle built. They have the priesthood established. And so now they've only been this 1 year in the wilderness, and they're about to set out for what would become then a total of 40 years out there in that wilderness. But as you look at this particular slide, Deuteronomy is at the exact end. Where Leviticus is at the end of the first year, we're now at the end of the 40th year, the 11th month. And so the entire wilderness wanderings effectively have taken place, 38 and some odd months, you know, years, have all taken place in the time frame between Leviticus and coming to this region right here. Now, when you stand on Mount Nebo, this is kind of a marble etching that they've got right there, identifying what you can see again. And so I realize it's not all that clear. I'd struggle to find some really great pictures. But right here, you can see inside that oval there is a black line that is the ridge line on the far side of the valley. And right up on top there, if it was just a little clearer, is where you'd be able to see the buildings of Jerusalem and the Mount of Olives itself. But on the map itself, you can see here all the way to Nablus, it's pointing. Jericho's right out there. Ramallah is what's called the East Bank now. Jerusalem over here. Qumran, where the Dead Sea Scrolls are found. Bethlehem. Herodium, which is a huge castle, one of many that Herod the Great had built. And then, of course, you can see the Dead Sea, and down in the south there to Hebron, where David would first become king so much later. I picked this particular picture, though, because I wanted you to see that while we're thinking about looking on the Dead Sea, and we typically think only, you know, of terrible desert, and it's true there's an awful lot of that down there, it's still seasonal. And green and growing. Livestock proliferate out there. Camels are wild. Goats are wild. Sheep are wild. And everybody's got pasture lands, you know, and crops that are going in, which you can see down in the valley there as well. Now, we're going to go through just a couple of pictures before we get into the introduction itself. But note that tree right there. And then this road right here. And as we go to the next picture, here's our tree and our road. So all the photographers done here, it's not a photo I took, all they've done is turn due north. These are all the mountains of Moab. They're standing on one particular peak, Mount Nebo. But as you stand here on Nebo, you can see the furthest sweep of all this mountain range to the north, and therefore the whole Jordan Valley leading up to the Sea of Galilee. And again, you can see how green and growing all of that is. At this moment in time, as we go through the entirety of the book of Deuteronomy, everyone has come out of this wilderness, as we've just read in the first six verses, battling their way through several of these countries that were at the very south of the Dead Sea and on the eastern side. And now they're camped down in this huge plain right here. It's winter time, though at this time of year, that means in that location it's about 65 degrees. So it's really pretty comfortable, but it is a winter time there. And so down in this valley, this is a different location on the same road, but farther down, you're about halfway to the Dead Sea now. You can see how vast this plain is. If you had several million people, you could put them in there. And then this is just the tip of the Dead Sea right here. If you walk around the corner on the mountains, of course, as I've said, you'd be able to see the entire length of it. Now you can see a little bit more. We turn just a little bit more straight across. Here's more of the Dead Sea right there. And as you look straight across that northern end, it's in the mist again. But here's where the Mount of Olives in Jerusalem also would be. This photograph has a bunch of birds that you happen to catch, you know, going by. But the plains of Moab begin here on the northern end of the Dead Sea. And as a matter of fact, that sea is a lot lower than it used to be. They've been having terrible drought for quite a while. And so there's a ridgeline along here, and you'll see better in the next photograph, you know, where the mountains really come down, you know, and hit the bottom. And all of that was underwater before it would have stretched farther upstream by quite a bit. It would have been much wider, you know, that salt sea. But the plains, nonetheless, are extensive. So now you see what I mean. It used to be the water level was clear up here in this tree line. It would have extended a lot out. You can see that they've had these sinkholes that have become really a problem. Took out one whole entire road that are developing now because it is so low. So don't think of them being right here. But this is where Moses has brought these people. It's taken him 40 years to get here. And what was he doing for the 40 years before those 40 years? Living in Midian. And what was he doing for the 40 years before those 40 years? He was living in Egypt. And he was grandson to a Pharaoh. And so Moses is 120 years old. And he's been through everything that you can imagine in life. He has come now to what he knows full well is the end of that life. And everything that Moses does in this book, you can just feel is different than what he's done in the preceding books. He, of course, is no eyewitness to creation. He is an eyewitness to anything that takes place in the book of Genesis. And so when he writes the book of Genesis, he's just a straight-up historian as God is informing him about events that he had not lived through. Then we come to Exodus, and it starts right off the bat with the beginning of his life. And now he becomes an eyewitness to all these things. He reveals his own faults as well as his strengths. Didn't want to be a spokesperson for God, but he was forced to against his will. Has to confront Pharaoh. He then, you know, sees these miracles and leads what may have been perhaps a million people out into a wilderness through walls of water, you know, in the Red Sea. And so phenomenal things that are taking place in this man's life. And then out on into that wilderness. And finally, to this place. As he stands, all these photos are taken from Mount Nebo. They're probably going up this thing and have soldiers posted on it at all times. Because bear in mind, yet once again, while it's just barely out of sight right here, this is just the tail end of Jericho right there. And so that's the next town they're going to go to. And they're in the plains just a couple of miles away. We're talking about Springfield, you know, from downtown Eugene. And they're going to be camped there for what appears to be about 40 days that will transpire in the course of this book. So if you'll grab a pencil, what I'd like to have everybody do now is to come back to the end of the book of Genesis. And I would just like to stitch together something I hadn't taken the time to do yet. These five books and the chronology of all five. So as you know, we didn't do Genesis. We didn't do Exodus. We started with Leviticus. We didn't do Numbers. Now we're skipping over Numbers and coming into Deuteronomy. All that's well and good, and there's a kind of a very natural connection right there. But nonetheless, what I want to do now is tie this all together for you. So we're going to start with the end of Genesis at chapter 50. Back here myself. Last chapter of Genesis, and the very last verse says, "So Joseph died at the age of 110 years, and he was embalmed and placed in a coffin in Egypt." So, the good times are over, right? As Joseph has rescued his family, brought them down now into Egypt. He's still second in command down there. Everything goes great. But of course, where Exodus begins in chapter 1, verses 6 through 8 of Exodus is this. Joseph died, and all his brothers and all that generation, But the sons of Israel were fruitful and increased greatly and multiplied and became exceedingly mighty, so that the land was filled with them. Now a new king arose over Egypt who did not know Joseph. And he said to his people, woe betide these Jews. Because that's where all the trouble begins. So, Genesis and Exodus are immediately joined chronologically, aren't they? I'm not attempting to give you a date. It's not about a date. The dates will be argued, you know, until Jesus comes back. But I just want you to see historical chronology is unfolding one step after the other. Then we come to Exodus chapter 40. So turn toward the end of the book. You'll notice not the absolute end of the book. But if you come to chapter 40 and verse 17, it came about in the first month of the second year, on the first day of the month, that the tabernacle was erected. Now, I pointed this out to you when we started Leviticus. That is a tremendously important verse right there. You want to make some kind of mark in your margin, highlight it somehow, these time references. So we're in the first month of the second year, on the first day of the month, that the tabernacle was erected. Well, if it's the first month of the second year and on the first day of that month, how much of the second year has gone by so far? None of it. We're at the absolute end of that first year in the wilderness. So it's the first day, first month, second year. So when you come to Leviticus, turn a couple pages, in chapter 1, verse 1, what do you have? Yahweh called to Moses, so he's still here, spoke to him from the tent of meeting, saying, speak to the sons of Israel, say to them, when any man of you brings an offering, and there goes Leviticus. Perfect hand in glove, just like Genesis rolled into Exodus, chronological continuity. We've done the exact same thing with Exodus as we began Leviticus. Now, let me just ask you, though, having just finished Leviticus, I think I pointed it out maybe one time. I wonder if you would have noticed as we're going through, how often now in Leviticus is Moses, the historian, telling us about the passage of time? Not at all. What's this book all about? This book is about the priesthood, Leviticus. This is about how to purify them, how to clothe them, how to establish them, you know, in a grand ceremony when they're to start their duties, all of the sacrificial system, the feast days. This is a book about the law that is the heart of the law. What's clean, what's unclean, what you can touch, what you can weave, you know, how your land's going to have jubilees and Sabbaths. It is not a history book. That's a law book now. So Genesis and Exodus have a lot more history, but Genesis history, Moses didn't experience. Exodus history, he experienced virtually all of it, save, you know, being an infant. Now we come into Leviticus, and it's just the second part of his life. And he's living all of this. It starts right after, same day as Exodus ends. So where does Leviticus end? And you can see I've got essentially the same here, but it's because we don't have, you know, a time stamp per se. But Leviticus essentially ends where it begins. You've got maybe a few weeks or months right there, but that's all we're talking about. And so this law is given to Moses to be explained and taught to those people. Now we didn't do Numbers. So turn to Numbers now, chapter 1, verse 1. We go then into Leviticus, next book. After that is Numbers. And lo and behold, how does the book begin? Numbers 1:1. The Lord spoke to Moses in the wilderness of Sinai in the tent of meeting on the first of the second month in the second year after they'd come out of the land of Egypt. So only 30 days have gone by. That's total chronological continuity. Genesis, hands off to Exodus. Exodus, hands off to Leviticus. Leviticus, hands off to Numbers. And Numbers becomes a preeminently historical book. Even though it's called Numbers, because we have long lists in which people are counted, you know, census takes place twice, Numbers is a very historical book. Is Moses living it? You bet. It's what's going to bring him now to Deuteronomy. Come to the end of the book of Numbers in chapter 33. Numbers 33. And again, this is not, you know, the very end in this case, not just by verses, but by whole chapters. But here's our time stamp. In Numbers 33, when the book is drawing to a close, at verse 38, we are told, Aaron the priest went up to Mount Hor at the command of Yahweh and died there. In the 40th year, after the sons of Israel had come from the land of Egypt, on the first day in the fifth month. Where did Numbers start? First day, second month of the second year. Where does Numbers end? First day of the fifth month. Oh, it's been 3 months then, right? No, the 40th year. It's been all the entirety of the wilderness wanderings. Numbers has a kind of an odd name in a way, because there's more history, and virtually all of the history of the wilderness wanderings, as far as, you know, the stretch of years goes, is there in that particular book. So then, you kind of have to extrapolate this, so I put it in italics. The last three chapters of Numbers, 34, 35, and 36, apparently cover 6 months. 6 months we just read about in the first six verses of Deuteronomy. 6 months of coming north, on the south end of the Dead Sea, on the east side of the Dead Sea. Going to meet a guy named Sihon, going to meet a guy named Og. We're going to have to fight our way to the north end of the Dead Sea, where we're going to camp in the plains of Moab, where we can just turn and look up at Mount Nebo, also known as Pisgah, where Moses is going to die in about a month and a half, not quite, and where the entirety of the book of Deuteronomy takes place. So there's about 6 months that aren't, you know, directly accounted for, but we just read, when you get to Deuteronomy, it's the first day of the 11th month in that 40th year. We have come to the end of the wilderness wanderings, and we have come to these plains. These are the plains of Moab. That's not actually Nebo in this case. It's on the next one. But you can see how stark it is most of the year. They've come out of that, and they've been doing that for 40 years. Now, they're on the north end of the Dead Sea. And, at you know, the seasonal, look how fertile it is. There's a guy with all his cattle out there. You know, he's got crops growing over here. He's got some kind of wheat or some such coming up over here. It can be very, very fertile. Enough to feed these people and prepare them for their entering into that promised land. Now you can see the arrow there. That is actually Mount Nebo right there. So try to just put yourself here. You're among a very large number of people. Moses says you can't even count them like stars of the heavens. You're among a people who are relatively young. Because 40 years ago, everybody that was over the age of 20 would do what in those following 40 years of wandering? They would die. There isn't anybody over the age of 60 standing here except who? Okay, and
Moses.
Okay, good for you. Okay, so you've got these three older guys, and then you've got this really, you know, fairly young group. If you can live to be 120 and you're 60, well, you're just middle-aged, right? So we have a vibrant nation. We have an entire nation. It's on its feet. And God has said, that will be your land. And that will be your land very, very soon. Moses, I want you to talk to him. So here are the circumstances of Deuteronomy. It was very heartening. And first thing she said, she came in this evening, you know, she often brings me announcements, the ones that I gave you tonight. She came in and she made a comment about Deuteronomy. I said, yeah, wonderful book. Wonderful book. This slide is where I want to point out what that is. Apparently, over the course of about 40 days, which are the last 40 days of Moses' life, and he knows it right well. He had been their great teacher and their legislator. He had been their historian and lived 40 years with everybody over, under the age of 20. He had lived with them, from those ages on, all of course that were born in the wilderness as well. He now is going to occupy a very interesting position. Aged father, he loves them all, like any parent does. But he also is going to offer some prophecies in this book that are particularly interesting. Now, he's been a prophet all along. I'm not denying that at all. But particularly in this book, and at some length, he's going to be foretelling the future of this nation. And so, he is a man who is very, I believe, and I think commentators all agree, very emotional. This is the end of my life. I, in the last 40 years, have lived through almost the entirety of all the lives of you people that I'm talking to. The oldest one among you I would have known from your age, 19, 11 months and 2 weeks, to 60. And so here we are. I'm 120 years old. I've lived twice as long as anybody here. I've been the grandson of a Pharaoh. I've been a shepherd in Midian. I've been a fugitive with you in the wilderness. But I brought you here because God in a burning bush asked me to. But because of the experiences that we've had together, I have been forbidden to enter that land. So I will have these last words with you before you go in to realize the great hope that I lost with you in the wilderness. So we come again to those first six verses. I'm going to put up this map and then two maps side by side after it. As we go back into the book of Deuteronomy, and we'll spend the last half of this class just reading through, I'm hoping with very little commentary to get through the first four chapters here this evening. Because here's one route that's been suggested. When they left this land Goshen, crossed over the Red Sea, headed down somewhere, they think, in the south, based on, for instance, the statement we just said that it was 11 days from Mount Sinai to Kadesh Barnea. So that works out when you look at the lay of the land. And so they had then, at the end of that first year, got their entire new religion and government and everything else established. They then start marching on up here, right this location. There's two ways you can go. They are led, of course, right up through Kadesh Barnea to the very south of their promised land, where what? Where they could have marched right on in if only what? If only they had the faith to do it. But did they? No. We'll read about that in a minute. So they've been in this wilderness now for this next 39 years. They've come back again to Ezion Geber, which is, by the way, actually, technically, here's your Gulf of Aqaba, is what it is. But that is the very tip of Israel today. Today, Israel goes like this, and then straight up like that. And so much of this wandering that they did in the wilderness is actually Israeli territory today. But after they've done the wandering, they've fought their way through here, as you're going to be reading, and they'll come to the very north end where Jericho's just on the other side. They're camped in those plains right now. So what I'm going to do here while we're reading, then you can just reference it as you like. On the left-hand side, we've got that same territory. But see how it says in yellow, Kingdom of Edom, and in purple's Moab, and here's orange for Ammon. Aramean tribes out here. There's another Aram that's the Aram of Damascus. Okay, these are, surrounding nations. And Philistines in the red over there. Okay, but over here are the 12 tribal allotments. So it's effectively the very same map. But over here you've got your tribal allotments. So here's Edom, here's Moab. These are Gentile territories. But Reuben and Gad are going to inherit the area that we're reading about right now, where Sihon and Og were occupied. They were also going to be making forays all the way up into Bashan. It's called Bashan here. But Moses is going to reference that. They did a lot of work in the east before, finally, they're going to come into Jericho, and Joshua's going to be at the head for Moses. We'll have left them. So, again, let's go now to Deuteronomy. Let's just read, and you can reference those as you like. But try to see this man, 120, plains of Moab, knows he'll never cross that Jordan River and all that fresh water they're drinking right now. He knows he never will. These are the words which Moses spoke to all Israel across the Jordan, in the wilderness, in the Arabah, opposite, we're not even sure where any of these places are now, but Suf, Paran, and Tophel, and Laban, and Hazeroth, and Nizahab. It's 11 days' journey from Horeb by way of Mount Seir to Kadesh Barnea. Came about in the 40th year, on the first day of the 11th month, that Moses spoke to the children of Israel according to all that Yahweh had commanded him to give to them. After he had defeated Sihon, the king of the Amorites, who lived in Heshbon, and Og, the king of Bashan, who lived in Ashtaroth and Edrei, crossed the Jordan in the land of Moab, Moses undertook to expound this law, saying, let me stop right there for just a second and capitalize on something I said earlier. Back in Leviticus, what you'll notice is Moses endlessly saying, Yahweh says, Yahweh told me to say, this is what the Lord said. Note how rare that will become in the book of Deuteronomy. This is far more personal. He is still moved by the Lord. He is still addressing the people as God's representative. But it's so much more personal. It's so much more emotional. And he's not very often going to be talking about, God told me to say this. He's just sharing with them the overview in the beginning here of what Numbers tells us more about, but these 40 years that they were in the wilderness. So in 6, Yahweh our God spoke to us at Horeb, saying, you've stayed long enough at this mountain. Turn and set your journey. Go to the hill country of the Amorites, to all their neighbors in the Arabah, in the hill country, and in the lowland, and in the Negev, by the sea coast, the land of the Canaanites, and Lebanon, as far as the great river, the river Euphrates. The immense territory that he's just set before them. 8. See, I have placed the land before you. Go in and possess the land which Yahweh swore to give to your fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, to them and their descendants after them. And I spoke to you at that time, saying, I am not able to bear you alone. Yahweh your God has multiplied you, and behold, you are this day as the stars of heaven for multitude. May Yahweh, the God of our fathers, increase you a thousandfold more than you are, and bless you, just as he has promised you. How can I alone bear the load and burden of you and your strife? Choose wise and discerning and experienced men from your tribes, and I will appoint them as your heads. And you answered me and said, remember, this is all way back 40 years ago, the thing which you have said to do is good. So I took the heads of your tribes, wise and experienced men, and appointed them heads over you, leaders of thousands and of hundreds, of fifties and of tens, and officers for your tribes. Then I charged your judges at that time, saying, hear the cases between your fellow countrymen, and judge righteously between a man and his fellow countrymen, or the alien who is with him. You shall not show partiality in judgment. You shall hear the small and the great alike. You shall not fear man, for the judgment is God's. And the case that's too hard for you, you shall bring to me, and I will hear it. And I commanded you at that time all the things that you should do. Then we set out from Horeb and went through all that great and terrible wilderness which you saw On the way to the hill country of the Amorites, just as Yahweh our God had commanded us, and we came to Kadesh Barnea. And I said to you, you've come to the hill country of the Amorites, which Yahweh our God is about to give us. See, Yahweh your God has placed the land before you. Go up, take possession, as Yahweh the God of your fathers has spoken to you. Do not fear or be dismayed. And all of you approached me and said, let us send men before us, that they may search out the land for us and bring back to us word of the way by which we should go up and the cities which we shall enter. And the thing pleased me, and I took 12 of your men, one man for each tribe. And they turned and went up into the hill country, came to the valley of Eshcol and spied it out. Then they took some of the fruit of the land in their hands, brought it down to us. They brought us back a report and said, it is a good land, which Yahweh our God is about to give us. Yet you were not willing to go up, but rebelled against the command of Yahweh your God. And you grumbled in your tents and said, because Yahweh hates us, he's brought us out of the land of Egypt to deliver us into the hand of the Amorites to destroy us. Where can we go up? Our brethren have made our hearts melt, saying the people are bigger and taller than we. The cities are large and fortified to heaven. And besides, we saw the sons of the Anakim there, apparently giants. And I said to you, do not be shocked nor fear them. Yahweh, your God who goes before you, will himself fight on your behalf, just as he did for you in Egypt before your eyes. And in the wilderness where you saw how Yahweh your God carried you, just as a man carries his son, in all the way which you walked until you came to this place. But for all this, you did not trust Yahweh your God, who goes before you on your way to seek out a place for you to encamp, in fire by night and cloud by day, to show you the way in which you should go. Now I'll pause there for just a second. I find this kind of curious. All of the people that rebelled over the age of 20, what? They died. They're not there. Does that mean that nobody under the age of 20 rebelled? You've never heard of a rebellious teenager. Okay. Now he's getting real personal with these people, and he is accusing them of rebellion. So bear in mind that these are not innocent people. These are not people who had all the faith in the world just because they were teenagers. Their parents had rebelled, and apparently they had too. The only thing that kept them alive was that they were over the age of war. And now you know how old you need to be a soldier in ancient Israel. You couldn't be one till you were 20. That was Israel's plan. We're 18 in our land, they were 20. And so that was standard throughout the whole thing. Age of 20 is the age, you know, for warfare. So see though how personal this is. He's been with these people, most of them, for 40 years. Now, quite a few would have been born along the way. So, you know, you've got every age that you can imagine. Someone born that day, I suppose. You got every age, you know, going back to 40. And then these, who were teenagers, and now they're in their 40s, 50s, 60s. But, you know, the majority all died off. And these people were just as guilty. So then, we're going to now come up to verse 34. Well, one more comment in 33. What's God been doing for 40 years every time it was time to pack up the camp and move? Pillars of fire and smoke. They witnessed a miracle every single day for 40 years. And if you do, what could pretty often happen? Same thing that happens to us. We've lived all of our lives in the United States of America. As I'm so fond of saying, that's like growing up in Disneyland and never setting foot outside the Magic Kingdom. How skewed is your thinking when all you've had is the best that this world can offer in the best of times? Gets pretty skewed. People take it for granted. They expect it to be this way. Well, it's my right, you know, to live in these kinds of times and ways. Well, it isn't. It isn't at all. So Moses is a loving father who has raised these people all this time with all the anger that such a good father can muster. Okay, and they're going to feel that too. Because he's desperate, brethren, it's not a deathbed. Don't think in those terms. He's still strong, sees well. Remember, we're going to get the description. He's doing fine for 120. Got most of us beat, probably. But his time's up. And he's desperate to have these people not do what the fathers who died did, not do what the mothers that are still living had done in their teen years, just to be faithful. Please. 34. And Yahweh heard the sound of your words, and he was angry, and took an oath, saying, not one of these men, this evil generation, shall see the good land which I swore to give your fathers, except Caleb, the son of Jephunneh. He shall see it. And to him and to his sons I will give the land on which he has set foot, because he has followed Yahweh fully. Yahweh was angry with me also on your account, saying, not even you shall enter there. Joshua, the son of Nun, who stands before you, he shall enter there. Encourage him, for he shall cause Israel to inherit it. Moreover, your little ones who you said would become a prey, and your sons who this day have no knowledge of good or evil, shall enter there, and I will give it to them, and they shall possess it. But as for you, turn around and set out for the wilderness by the way to the Red Sea. Then you answer. Remember, all this is 40 years ago. He's rehearsing what happened back then. Then you answered and said to me, we have sinned against Yahweh. We will indeed go up and fight, just as Yahweh our God commanded us. And every man of you girded on his weapons of war and regarded it as easy to go up into the hill country. Yahweh said to me, say to them, do not go up nor fight, for I am not among you, lest you be defeated before your enemies. So I spoke to you, but you would not listen. Instead, you rebelled against the command of Yahweh, acted presumptuously, and went up into the hill country. The Amorites who lived in that hill country came out against you and chased you as bees do, and crushed you from Seir to Hormah. Then you returned and wept before Yahweh. But Yahweh did not listen to your voice, nor give ear to you. So you remained in Kadesh many days, the days that you spent there. Now this has got to be breaking Moses' heart. Reliving all of that horror. 40 years that they cost him out there living in that wilderness. 40 years they prevented him from having been able to just walk on in to the promised land. He believed they could do it. But these very people wouldn't believe that thing. And then he says it. The Lord was angry with me also on your account. Now you remember the event, don't you? People were grumbling endlessly. They always do. What have I done? There it is. Okay, sorry about that. Yeah, you know, and so once again, and apparently in some anger, Moses struck the rock. God was angry with him for having done that in that moment. He lost all of the hope that he had of that promised land. But it really had been at the instigation of those people. He lost control. He sinned. He's not denying that for a minute. But if they hadn't, he wouldn't have been tempted. And he's remembering it all as he stands here virtually on the shores of the Jordan River within easy sight of Jericho at the foot of the mountain he's going to die on. There he is. Just must be breaking his heart. Chapter 2. Then we turned and set out for the wilderness by the way to the Red Sea, as Yahweh spoke to me, and circled Mount Seir for many days. And Yahweh spoke to me, saying, you've circled this mountain long enough. Now turn north and command the people, saying, you will pass through the territory of your brothers, the sons of Esau, who live in Seir, and they will be afraid of you. So be very careful. Do not provoke them, for I will not give you any of their land, even a footstep, because I've given, Mount Seir to Esau as a possession. You shall buy food from them with money so that you may eat. You shall also purchase water from them with money so that you may drink. For Yahweh your God has blessed you in all that you've done. He's known your wanderings through this great wilderness. These 40 years Yahweh your God has been with you. You've not lacked a thing. So we passed beyond our brothers, the sons of Esau, who live in Seir. How are sons of Esau their brothers? Exactly. Okay. And so, been bad blood and all those problems. But Esau is Edom. Esau's red. Esau lost his birthright and all that. So it's 8. So we passed beyond our brothers, the sons of Esau, who live in Seir, away from the Arab road, and away from Elath, and from Ezion Geber. And we turned and passed through by the way of the wilderness of Moab. So I showed you a little bit earlier there, where is it? Well, these two maps aren't the right ones. Go back one. Okay, here's our Ezion Geber. You've heard it several times now. Well, this is now second time that they've been there. All the wilderness wanderings, when they couldn't just go north, they're back. And now you're being told, these Edomites, I gave them that land. That's Esau, your relative's land from way back. So you leave them alone. You just pay them. Pay them what? They've been wandering in the wilderness. What are they going to pay them with?
They were given all sorts of riches when they left Egypt.
When they left Egypt, they were showered with money. The Egyptians were begging them to leave, remember? And they gave them silver and gold. Well, they've been packing that around all this time, too. Okay, so let's come down now to... where did I leave off? 8. So we passed beyond our brothers, the sons of Esau, who live in Seir, away from the Arab road, away from Elath and Ezion Geber. We turned and passed through by the way of the wilderness of Moab. Then Yahweh said to me, do not harass Moab, nor provoke them to war, for I will not give you any of their land as a possession. Because I've given everything's got more than one name, to the sons of Lot as a possession. The Emim lived there formerly, and people as great, numerous, and tall as the Anakim. Like the Anakim, they're also regarded as Rephaim, but the Moabites call them Emim. And again, we're not familiar with any of those terms today. 12. The Horites formerly lived in Seir, but the sons of Esau dispossessed them and destroyed them from before them and settled in their place, just as Israel did to the land of their possession, which Yahweh gave to them. Now rise. Cross over the brook Zered yourselves. So we crossed over the brook Zered. Now the time that it took for us to come from Kadesh Barnea until we crossed over the brook Zered was 38 years, until all the generation of the men of war perished from within the camp as Yahweh had sworn to them. Moreover, the hand of Yahweh was against them to destroy them from within the camp until they all perished. So it came about when all the men of war had finally perished from among the people that Yahweh spoke to me, saying, you shall cross over Ar, the border of Moab, today. And when you come opposite the sons of Ammon, do not harass them nor provoke them, for I'll not give you any of the land of the sons of Ammon as a possession, because I've given it to the sons of Lot as a possession. It's also regarded as the land of the Rephaim, for Rephaim formerly lived in it. The Ammonites call them Zamzamim, a people as great, numerous, and tall as the Anakim, but Yahweh destroyed them before them. They dispossessed them and settled in their place, just as he did for the sons of Esau, who live in Seir, when he destroyed the Horites from before them, and they dispossessed them and settled in their place even to this day. Now, brother, we've read now 3 times about dispossessing people and taking over. Okay? And all, even the names are unfamiliar, everything. How long ago was it for these people? Last 6 months. They've been battling their way north on the eastern side of the Dead Sea, heading north for their promised land. So it's all fresh in their minds. They know what God is doing for them, and now we come to 23. The Avim, who lived in villages as far as Gaza, same Gaza we got today. The Caphtorim, who came from Caphtor, destroyed them and lived in their place. Arise, set out, pass through the valley of Arnon. Look, I've given Sihon the Amorite, king of Heshbon, and his land into your hand. Begin to take possession, contend with him in battle. This day I will begin to put the dread and fear of you upon the peoples everywhere under the heavens, who when they hear the report of you shall tremble and be in anguish because of you. So I sent messengers from the wilderness of Kedemoth to Sihon, king of Heshbon, with words of peace, saying, let us pass through the land. This is all Numbers. I will travel only on the highway. I will not turn aside to the right or to the left. You will sell me food for money so that I may eat, and give me water for money so that I may drink. Only let me pass through on foot. Just as the sons of Esau who live in Seir, the Moabites who live in Ar, did for me, until I cross over the Jordan into the land which Yahweh our God is giving to us. But Sihon, king of Heshbon, was not willing for us to pass through his land. For the Lord your God hardened his spirit, made his heart obstinate, in order to deliver him into your hand, as he is today. And the Lord said to me, see, I have begun to deliver Sihon and his land over to you. Begin to occupy, that you may possess his land. And Sihon, with all his people, came out to meet us in battle at Yahaz. You'll notice I do that from time to time. I know it's a J. We use J's. In the Hebrew language, they pronounce it like a Y. And sometimes I just do that. 33. And Yahweh our God delivered him over to us, and we defeated him with his sons and all his people. So we captured all the cities at that time, utterly destroyed the men, women, and children of every city. We left no survivor. We took only the animals as our booty and the spoil of the cities which we had captured. From Aroer, which is on the edge of the valley of Arnon, the city which is in the valley, even to Gilead, there was no city that was too high for us. Yahweh our God delivered all over to us. Only you did not go near the land of the sons of Ammon, all along the river Jabbok, and the cities of the hill country, and wherever Yahweh our God had commanded us. We'll stop there for this evening a few minutes early. Brethren, what is Moses doing? He has become a great orator. He is rehearsing history, and in this case, most of it's only in the last 6 months. Can anybody defeat these people? Nobody can defeat these people. He said, I promise you, the fear of you will spread everywhere. Well, now, as each of these countries gets knocked down, as they're going further and further north to eventually cross that Jordan at the north end of the Dead Sea, is the word about these defeats traveling ahead of them? People fleeing, being pushed ahead? So we'll close the class tonight with just this thought. That entire undefeated army that's knocked over everybody that got in their way in the last 6 months is now just an easy sight over there at Springfield. Jericho's on the horizon. And what does Moses know? Faithless people have the hardest time serving their God. Despite everything I'm now rehearsing, which we've lived together, these faithless people, watch what happens as he gets deeper in the book. All right, appreciate your attention. That'll be it for tonight.